comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Hey guys, welcome to the inaugural Here Comes the Money podcast, where Peter and I try and unpack a lot of misconceptions there is and unbox all these different things that people think about wealth management and financial planning. Because Peter, there's always, something happening in the media or people talk about interest rates and you don't know who to believe.
Correct. Yeah, excited to be here, Hov. You're right. The media, I mean, the fact is the negative stuff is what sells stories and makes people listen. But a lot of the times it's mostly, not false, but a lot of it is false, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's designed to scare you to take action or to listen or whatever it might be. So I guess the objective of us putting this together is to give people a bit of unbiased information that they can obviously, you know, absorb and hopefully put into action at some point.
Yep. And look, before we go into that, Peter, let's go step back for a second, because today what we'll do is we'll give everyone a bit of a background about us, and then I think we should step through the process of what people should be looking at when they step through this process. So, you know, for me, background's all numbers, tertiaries, accounting, economics, finance, planning. I've got two kids, got the house, got the investments, and trying to help people change their lives and make their lives better and make money, by using their money better. How about for you, Peter? Just quick background.
I think from a background perspective, we probably are similar in that way, where we've got the tertiary education, obviously two kids for myself as well, two boys, Daniel and Adam. Obviously, we want to, everything we do is to make their life better and easier in the future. Obviously, me growing up, I grew up with my parents. They immigrated from Europe and they worked hard, and obviously, you know, they had a certain way of thinking about money and a certain way of doing things, where you save, pay off your debt. But watching them, the way they worked, working hard, obviously you learn a lot from that. You take that on board for your, I guess, journey in life. But I've always sort of been very interested in seeing how other people do it, and obviously working smart and not just harder. I think the big thing there is when you combine the two, working hard and smart, I think that's where you can really get ahead. And I've tried to apply that in everything we do, and I think Kovic's the same.
Yeah, I'm a little bit different.
Yeah.
My dad's the kind of guy that, again, immigrated from Europe back in the 50s, but decides to go out and borrow $3 million in the 80s and buy himself a shopping centre when he's got four kids and the interest rates are going to 20%. So a bit more, a different risk profile. I don't know how he did it. No education, standard story, left school in year
Street
three.
Smart.
But yeah, risk taker.
Yeah.
And obviously that's paid off. But I think it's not right to be here or here.
Yeah.
I think somewhere in the middle where you can be risk averse, be safe, secure and flexible with what things you do. Because I think we all know that doing nothing is the riskiest thing to do, because you know where you're going to end up.
So Hov's the silver spoon guy. I'm not. That's not true.
It is, but I've been smacked in the face a couple of times, as you know as well. We've gone down, we've gone up, and it's not how you are when you're up, it's how you get up when you're down. So
exactly. There's
my first analogy for you, Peter.
Ding, ding, ding.
All right, now over to the financial planning, wealth management space.
Should we start with a bit of a update on current sort of...
Well, the most important thing on the tip of everyone's tongues is interest rates.
Yeah.
And I know we did an update yesterday to our current clients, giving them some very sensitive information that we picked up by reading the publicly listed RBA's minutes of the meetings. And it was quite interesting, because what they said is that they think they've overstepped their boundaries. They think they've put interest rates up a little bit too quick, too soon. But we all know that, if America sneezes, Australia catches a cold. So all they're really doing is looking at the Federal Reserve and going, hey, what have they done and what are we going to do? That's not all we're doing. I don't want to take away the money management of the RBA, but they are mandated to keep the economy going and not put us into recession. So at the end of the day, we feel, and from our finance team internally, Pete, we had the discussion yesterday. We feel that the interest rates are going to be on hold, at least in December, while they watch.
Yep.
You know, it's a watch and act situation. And, hopefully we've seen the peak, or we're only a quarter away, 25 basis points away from the peak, which is good news for many. And how do we know that? Because a couple of the things that came out, because generally, I mean, this is all COVID related. It was a cash splash in COVID, and now we're seeing similar in the UK, similar in the US.
A lot of it's a supply issue, you probably agree to.
And that's what I was getting to.
Supply chain problems, yeah.
Apparently, some of the reports we read is that the cost of shipping out of Southeast Asia has dropped by 80% in the last quarter. 80. So if that supply chain management comes back into play, I know because, you know, my passion's always been property, even though, you know, I've got fingers in every space. You know, I always act in the property space. Keeping a keen eye and a close eye on the construction cost, it's not going up anymore. I think it's plateaued. There is some builders out there still putting them up, but to me, that's a price gouge.
Yeah, taking advantage of the situation. So,
but I think the bigger players in the market, the ones that we can trust and the ones that we can work with, those guys have now plateaued. They're honouring, or they've kept honouring their prices, but now their pricing is, you know, I think topped out as well, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
Inflation, Federal Reserve, again, going back to the US, for the last 4 months hasn't moved.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things we're looking at in that space as far as the interest rate goes. I guess when you talk about media, number one is the interest rate. Number two is property, right? The property is going down. We're losing
10%. Been hearing that for what, how long, 20 years maybe?
I know. And look, the reality is higher price point areas in capital cities have definitely stagnated or even taken a slight step back. But what people forget is if you look over the last 12 months, they've gone up by 30%.
Yeah.
So for a correction of 10%, when it's gone up by 30, we're still 20% ahead.
Yeah.
Now, by no means are they the ones that we consider at all for investment because they don't have the right yield prospects. They don't pay for themselves.
Mm.
They're not appropriate for anything that, you know, you want to do, generally speaking, when you're looking at investment property. It's more of an owner-occupied thing.
Mm.
So a couple of other things with the property side of things where the media, I think, has gotten it all wrong or they're not they're talking about things that happened 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Is there no one's talking about immigration?
Yep.
In the next 12 months, we're going to see 180,000 people come back into immigration. Now, that's still not to pre-COVID levels.
Yeah. Wow.
So we're going to see that increase. Mm. With the current government we have today, you know, they're pro-immigration, and obviously there's a skill shortage, unemployment levels, all-time lows. So immigration is definitely going to impact. Now, the way I simplified it, is I said, out of 180,000 people, about one third will come to Sydney, probably a bit more than a third. One third to Brisbane, one third to Melbourne.
It's fair to spread it, I guess.
Yeah, say 60,000. And just to be fair, let's say that there's some, you know, leakages that go to SA or WA, whatever. But if you look at today, as of today in New South Wales, there's only 12,000 vacant dwellings.
Yeah.
So if there's 60,000 people coming in, where are they going to live? That together with, I think, you know, a lot of construction, you know, developers, construction stopped, projects didn't go ahead.
Yeah.
Number one, because funding on a development scale, when you look at $10 to $50 million funding, those, you know, the way that the quantity surveyors look at things, and they're stopping these projects from proceeding. Yeah. So again, putting more pressure on the undersupply of housing. Then we've also got the co-ownership thing coming in early next year.
Yeah, okay.
So the government's going to be putting in 30 up to 40% of equity for either, if you can to be eligible, you've got to be a first home buyer, a single parent, you've got to be a single person aged over 50, or you've got to work in the police, fire, or be a nurse.
So what you're saying is all these things are probably going to create more demand. So vacancies are low, more demand for rental, pushes rental prices up. Effectively, property prices will probably go up as well.
Yeah, eventually. And they are capped. So every state has a different cap. You've got, I think, 850, 900,000 in New South Wales, 750 in Queensland, and so on and so forth. So these are not applicable to any of these high price point inner city capitals, but they are really applicable to any middle or outer ring suburb of any major city. So there's your update as far as, I guess, property side of things, how we foresaw the interest rate to go. But I think more importantly, Pete, it's you can get caught up in this noise, and you and I can keep talking about this. Yeah. But I think realistically, if you step back, and that's where wealth management comes in.
Yeah.
If you could step back and look at, you know, where I am now. I mean, where do you start when you?
Okay, so obviously, when we sit with clients, I guess the fact is people have a misconception about financial planning and who it's for and who it isn't for. A lot of people feel like it's for people that have money, a lot of money or whatever, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, it's really not. It can really help anybody. I believe, and our specialty probably is your everyday mums and dads, because I believe they're probably the ones that need the most help. If you've already got your millions, you probably don't need our help as much. I'm sure you can still benefit, but, you know, the people that your everyday mums and dads that are busy, family, kids, all the noise in the media, jump on Google, a lot of mixed information. Nobody knows what to actually do and what's going to work best for them. So what we do for those people is obviously we help them establish where they are now clearly, and where they want to be, what they're trying to achieve, and where they're trying to get to.
And often they don't know what they don't know. Like
when
you're sitting, correct me if I'm wrong, you're sitting in front of them.
Mm.
They've endeavored to come in and have a chat and that initial,
when
we do the initial assessment. Mm. Doesn't cost them anything. We want to make sure that, we can benefit them first.
Yeah.
And you see, they start to really think about what they want at that point in time when they're sitting in front of you. Whereas for us, like if you were a plumber, Pete, you know how to put those pipes together. You don't have to think about it. You just do it unconsciously.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a mechanic, change the oil, dentist.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you had an ulcer tooth problem or something, I'm not going to try. I'm not going to endeavor to fix your
cavity. Is there
something wrong with my teeth? So basically, how can we always look over that? What I'm trying to say is that they don't know what they don't know. So I think the most important part of what we deliver is in that discovery, also the education.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of people don't even know what they need to be thinking about for their future. They don't even know. They don't know what goals to think about because they don't know if it's realistic or not. And some people might be just embarrassed to even mention it because they feel like it's too far-fetched from where they are now, and quite often it isn't.
I think people walk around thinking they'll never retire.
Correct.
Yeah, or 5 years I'll retire, then I'll die.
Well, the problem is we're all brought up again a certain way, just like I was saying before about my history, where people have been brought up to think you start working when you're 20 or whenever that is, and you work until you're 65 and you get your age pension and then you die 5 years later or whatever it is. They don't realize that they can actually retire sooner if they have the means to do so.
Do you think they just think that sometimes they look in the mirror and they go, do I deserve to retire?
A lot of it is mindset. I think what you're talking about is mindset. A lot of it, people believe that they need to follow that path because that's the path that's always been around, and people have been sort of brought up to believe that is the path and the only path, when quite often it isn't.
Yeah, that money mindset is, I think, a very, very good starting point.
100%.
And so now you can start to see the journey that we take people through. And I guess that's the reason we're doing this is to let people without coming in, because sometimes they might be scared to come in and approach it thinking it's not for me. But it's amazing how we've come across clients along the way who thought nothing could be done.
Yeah.
We won't name names, but we had a guy, he was a miner, big income.
100%.
If you remember, he had 20 grand savings, he was renting, but he had 300 grand in his super.
Yeah.
And 3 years on, we've worked out how to get him into the property market in his own name, into the property market with his super fund.
Yeah, yeah.
3 years on, he's got two properties.
It's probably made about 400 or 500.
We should get him on the show. Yeah, we should get him on the show.
And I think we will. A part of the episode is moving forward, just so everyone else knows as well, we will actually have clients come on as case studies, if you like. I don't know why I'm doing the exclamation marks with my fingers when it's radio. It's a podcast, sorry, but anyway. But I guess the objective is, once we know all that about clients, is to help them create some certainty about how they can get to where they want to be.
Yeah. So now you're back in, you're sitting in front of the clients, they're going through this, money mindset, and they start to say, okay, Peter, this is where I want to be. Because my income, I'm used to living on X.
Yeah.
And then they go, what do I need? Yeah. And then how do you tell them? How do you help them?
Well, look, a lot of people don't know what they need, how much they need to live on when they retire, because they're used to whatever they're doing at the moment. They pay their mortgage, kids' school fees, whatever it might be. But a lot of people think that they don't probably know how much they're going to need when they stop working. And then they hear the different numbers getting thrown around, 50K, which is $1,000 a week. Now, for some people that'd be okay, but for a lot of people that might be earning 150 or 200K a year as a family income.
Yeah, maybe they're
It's probably going to be nowhere near enough. And there's other numbers that get thrown around. I think, is it the superannuation? What is it? The guys that say 63,000 a year? What are they called again?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. Like the research house.
No, it is one of the research houses. So quite often what we do is, if they're not sure how much they need to live on, well, I have a couple of different ways that I take clients through that. But one simple way is basically just to look at your income, your after-tax income, and just assume that you're going to need about 75% of that.
Yep. So you're on 100 grand. You'll probably pay about 20 grand in tax.
Yeah.
That's 80 grand after-tax income.
Yeah.
You're probably paying approximately a third of that to your mortgage at the moment.
Yeah.
And then that brings you down to, about 50 grand?
It's probably a little bit more than that. But, roughly, if you're on 100 and you're paying 20,000 in tax, that's 80 grand net. If you say 75% of that, it's probably roughly where you'll need to be for your...
Because your kids have left home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your mortgage is paid off.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, and to maintain your current lifestyle.
The fact is some expenses will drop off, some will pick up because you have a lot more time to spend your money. You're on a 24/7 weekend all of a sudden.
So now you've had this discussion, and this is going to be different with different people.
And that's one thing. I mean, retirement's one thing, but there's other goals we need to assess along the way too. A lot of people come in and say, we want to pay our mortgage off sooner. We need to pay for kids' school fees. The retirement one that you were talking about. I think
that's more front of mind for people that we see generally, I mean, from 25 to 45 or even 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's all about how do I save tax and how do I pay for mortgage.
100%.
Because when you talk to them about retirement, it's so far away. Yeah. But you know,
the fact is, what you're saying there, those two elements, the tax and the mortgage side of things, like if you use them correctly, you can help yourself get to your retirement quicker too.
Yeah.
So that's the important thing to keep in mind. So it's not just about reducing the amount of tax you pay. It's not about that. It's about what it can do for you.
The sum of the parts is greater than the whole. Absolutely. That was a ringer. That was a zinger. So once we've gone and established where people sit currently, it's very, very easy because I often say to someone, you know, let's first now we've established what our goals and objectives are, let's look at what our current ingredients are.
Yep.
I always use that ingredients
exactly
recipe.
The same, 100%.
And what I'm looking at first is their tax.
Yep.
So if someone is on, let's say, $80,000 a year, their tax is, I think we worked it out the other day, it was like $69 a day or something like that. But whatever it is, say it's $70 a day if you're on $80,000 to $100,000. Imagine getting a $50 note and a $20 note. Hold that in your hand on Monday morning, throw it in the bin. You wouldn't do it.
No.
Tuesday, get another $50, another $20, throw it in the bin. Wednesday, another $50, another $20. Whereas people just go through their life doing this and never stop and do anything about it. Now, is it because they don't know they can do anything about it?
For a lot of people, I think it is, and part of it might be fear as well.
Yeah, because they don't know, okay, what can I do? Well, there's different strategies you can implement to save this tax. Yep. There's simple ones, salary sacrifice. Then you get to the more effective and efficient ones, which is geared investment.
Yep.
And you can talk about self-managed super funds and all that sort of stuff. But I think as soon as you step out of someone's comfort zone, if they don't know, if they're not educated, they don't see the pieces in the puzzle, they're not going to implement it.
Well, the fact is, you know, we're not sort of educated like that through our schooling life on all those, you know, the basics of money, if you ask me. For us, it's basic because we do it every day, but it could be basic for everybody if they're actually taught about it early on.
Yeah.
You can see the power of it, how it works. And the fact is, if you understand it and you know how it works, you can do it in a lower risk way. It doesn't have to be high risk, basically.
So then let's talk about that. If, you know, I mean, I've got a million examples in my head of people that have come in and they're just mum and dad, not earning massive bucks, don't have a really huge amount of equity. They've got their house, they've got a mortgage.
Yep.
And we know by extrapolating and forecasting where their superannuation is a best case scenario, we know they're going to end up with $500,000 and a house paid off.
Yep.
At that point in time, they could walk away and do nothing and know where they're going to end up, but they don't. Why do they proceed, Pete? Why do they start implementing stuff?
I think once you've shown them what is possible and how little impact it can have, it just shows them that there is a better way and it creates a bit of certainty for their pathway from where they are to where they want to get to. And that's quite often why they choose to move ahead. And the funny thing is, sort of, you'll see him a year or 2 years later, and you'll have a review meeting, as we do pretty much every year, sometimes every 6 months, and you'll talk about what's happening in the market. And the difference I see from actual clients to people that are before they become clients is the fact that there's not really much or any panic.
Oh, they come in, they're relaxed, the shoulders are down.
So the media could be talking whatever they want to talk about,
and
trying to scare the hell out of everybody. But you can hear it in their voice and you can see from what they're doing that they're not concerned about it.
Yep. Being in regards to their property portfolio, being in regards to their superannuation.
Property portfolio, share portfolio, whatever it might be. Yep. They're not overly concerned because they know that it's all long-term stuff. And I know everyone talks about long-term stuff, but, I mean, there's no short-term, you know,
get rich. But you said something very interesting. Why people put it in place is because they sort of understand that it can be done with little impact.
Little impact.
And when you're talking about little impact, it's to their cash flow.
Yeah.
Because if I've got mum and dad, two kids, working 7 days or 5 days a week, the only real time I've got to myself is on the weekend where I spend time. I don't have time to do anything, nor do I have any extra dollars to put into anything.
Yep.
They often think, oh, because I'm doing this geared investment or something, I need to fork out hundreds of dollars a week that I don't have.
Yeah.
Whereas the reality is, Pete, we're doing it in a way
little impact.
When you structure it, when you structure it appropriately, you're using their current income they've got now.
Yep.
Nothing's changed.
Yep.
And you're chucking in $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 of tax that they've tapped into that they never had before to help fund that whole thing. And then use the surplus income to pay their primary debt off quicker.
And something you said that is key, the cash flow obviously is key. We obviously need to make sure there's sufficient cash flow. And I think the reason they can do it, because like you said, it's structured properly, whatever investment might be, whether it is property or super or whatever it might be. But I guess I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say?
I love planning around cash flow too. I think that, I thought that's where you were going.
No, where I was going with it is the cash flow planning, yes, 100%. But we will even make sure that they have certain buffers in place. So, you know, if there is times where it's a little bit tougher or you require a bit more cash flow, you've got a fallback position. You've got a buffer. You don't have to panic.
Plan for the worst.
Expect the best. Exactly right.
Is that
the same? Hope for the best. Yeah. Whatever.
Plan for the worst. Hope for the best. I always say, do your numbers so you can put under your pillow and sleep at night.
So that's Hobbs saying. You can tell that's Hobbs saying.
Yeah.
Hit that bell. That bell.
So once we show someone, and I was coming back to what you were saying about cash flow, I love banking on cash flow because it's something I know.
Yeah.
I hate
it's the most
relying on things we don't know. I love relying on stuff that we know.
Mm.
You know, tried, tested, proven results have come from this.
The fact is, if you don't have the right cash flow, you can't really do
anything. You never live to see the day that it grows.
You can't really do anything.
And that's in any walk of life. So be it building model portfolios with the right dividend yields, and capital growth mix, be it, you know, having good core assets or, you know, having that satellite asset that's going to give you the advantage of growth or whatever it's going to be in different walks of life is going to be the main thing.
Mm.
Now, once they've understood that, I think then it sort of unlocks this massive money mindset.
Like it clicks a little switch in their heads.
That's why I love this. That's why I love doing
this. Yeah, it starts to make sense to people. They feel comfortable because they understand it. I think that's the important part. When you understand something, you're more comfortable to do it.
Yep.
If you don't understand it, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, when we sit with clients, we're not there to try and scare them into doing anything because that doesn't work. Quite often, if you scare someone, they kind of run the other way.
We're going to deep dive into specific scenarios like this with the actual clients.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
So our viewers and listeners can, and firsthand, see, you know, walk in those shoes and see what they went through, because I think that helps a lot.
Yeah.
If you can see somebody else has done it, it's like, if they can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And it's not unattainable. It's not unreachable. So,
and hopefully some of the situations or those clients resonate with people that are listening, and you know, they might, you might sort of help them take some action. You know, it's not really about motivating people to do anything. Motivation doesn't last. I think it's about taking action, helping people take action.
Yep. So this is the money mindset. This is how we've sort of stepped through now and scraped the top of wealth management and financial planning and how it sits. I think we're going to go into doing some questions from our mailbox. People are going to throw in some questions at us. We'll put that into the next episode.
Yep.
What else, Peter? Some real life examples. Getting clients to have clients, a chat.
The case studies, case examples, studies. Like you said. I think even just trying to tell people about different strategies that are out there, hints and tips, information.
Hints and tips is a great one.
Yep.
Because with hints and tips, what was really exciting is recently what we did for a lot of our clients on the finance space.
Yep.
When the banks started to put their interest rates up, obviously the RBA in line with the RBA. Geez, when the RBA puts it up, within 24 hours they put it up.
Yep. When they put it down, it takes about 3 months.
So, but what we did...
The banks ring the bell when that happens too.
Yeah. What we did was, like, I'm not going to say it was a bit cheeky, but it was very effective with that retention team avenue that we took through the major lenders, how we got our clients. We went over to the bank that they were currently with. Remember how we said to them, we're going to move, we're going to give you this rate, unless you match it.
Yeah.
So with no applications, no paperwork, no nothing, how much money did we save our clients?
It's a renegotiation process, and if you don't ask for it, you don't get it. The banks aren't going to call you and say, we'll give you a discount because we feel good.
Yeah.
We're good guys. They're not going to do it.
We had a situation yesterday. A lady was one of our current clients. She was paying a little bit over what she should, not much. But I said, okay, this is the other bank, and I gave the name of the other bank, which had a better rate.
Mm.
And Steve came up and said, that other bank also gives you $4,000 cash back.
Yeah, there you go.
So then her lender, she went back to the retention team. They matched the rate. She came back to me, oh, it's great, they matched the rate. I said, go back to them and ask them for $4,000.
Did they give it?
We're waiting for the outcome now.
That'd be amazing. That would be amazing.
But I've actually heard of a scenario where the bank actually, to retain their business, gave them the $4,000. So as far as hints and tips go, there's a really, really easy way to save money.
Exactly.
Without really doing much.
Yeah.
Without doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just a phone call.
It's not even, I know for our clients, because they're already on our book, all they had to do is give us their loan ID, and that's it. We did the rest.
We did
everything for them. So, which is fantastic. And they were sitting at home, not even worried about it. And I called, we reached out to them.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, that's the best. So
for a lot of people, you know, they either don't know to do it or how to do it or what to say or what to email. Because, you know, I don't know if it's fear or they're worried about getting sort of rejected by the bank or whatever it might be. But, you know, you have to ask, unfortunately. Yeah. A lot of people don't even know what rate they're paying these days.
Yeah.
They've come up so quickly, they don't even realize what they're actually paying.
Which brings us to the other subject we were talking about is fixed rate payers.
Yep.
So what, in the last 3 months, what happened, Daniel?
Overheated
camera.
The camera overheated.
Must be hot in this room.
There's some fire getting thrown around. That's what's happening.
I was going to start talking about the fixed rates and how they expired and then how people are going to go back to a standard variable product if they're not careful. So you're sitting pretty at 1.9%. Your fixed rate expires, let's say, in January.
Yeah.
And I've got...
Yeah.
You don't do anything over Christmas. You have your Christmas parties.
Exactly.
You have your New Year's. Yeah. You come into January and January 10, let's say, your fixed rate goes from 1.9 to 5.24.
Nice hit, isn't it?
Because it's a standard variable rate.
I think that might be another reason why RBA is considering to slow down and back off.
$30 billion of loans are going to come off fixed rate in the next 3 months.
Nice.
So,
and everyone's going to jump up to whatever, 5%, 6%, whatever it
is. But the point is this, that number that they're putting you on, that 5.5% or whatever percent, 6% even, that's a standard variable rate product. Right. It's not the best rate in the market.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Whereas one simple phone call, one phone call will tell you, look, you can get it for 4.2. Mm. So, and we'll quickly implement, but we can't implement that. You know, you've got to give it 5 days, 10 days. So, and in reality, it's usually a few weeks. You've got to get your docs together, pick the right lender, get the loan application in, get it approved, get it settled. You know, it's a 4 to 6 week process.
Yeah. So, what about the, our broker, Stephen, was talking about mortgage prisoner with people where their serviceability with rates going up may not be enough to, you may need to renegotiate. Who knows?
So, look, that was a great chat today, Pete. I'm really happy with this.
I'm looking forward to many more episodes. Yeah,
we'll go and we'll also take, I think we'll take some comments from everyone, questions, comments, because I like the hints and tips today.
Tell us what you want to hear about. Tell us what you want to know about information-wise, unbiased opinions, whatever you want to call it. Tell us what you want to know. Thanks for joining us on Here Comes the Money. We'll see you again soon.